Welcome to the Charleston Marketing Podcast, powered by the Charleston American Marketing Association, broadcasting from our home base at Charleston Radio Group. Thanks to CRG, we're able to talk to the movers and shakers of Charleston, from economy to art, from hospitality to tech, and everything in between. These leaders have made a home here in the Lowcountry. They live here, they work here, they make change here. Why? Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome to the Charleston Marketing Podcast, powered by the Charleston American Marketing Association. We're here recording in the Charleston Radio Group Studios. Mike Compton here, president of Roombo Advertising, GoRoombo.com, and your director of membership experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Stephanie. Stephanie, say what's up.
What's up, everybody? I'm Stephanie Barrow, your CAMA Pass president, the founder of Stephanie Barrow Consulting, a digital strategy agency here in Charleston. And I'm excited to be here with our friend Ernest. He is the founder of the digital, founder and director of the Charleston Digital Corridor, an organization that is a nucleus of the region's tech community.
I'm delighted to be here with you, Mike and Stephanie.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Spending a little bit of time with your audience.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
And to get to know you a little bit, we awkwardly read your bio in front of you.
Yes, we do. We do that.
Let's get into it, huh? Ernest Andrade, the founder and CEO of the Charleston Digital Corridor, has been a driving force in the Charleston tech community for over 20 years. Through his efforts with the CDC, successfully engaged the local community to support entrepreneurs and attract top tech talent to the area, accelerating the growth of Charleston's tech economy from 18 companies in 2001 to over 700 today. Ernest has worked tirelessly to foster a thriving tech ecosystem in Charleston through four pillars: community, talent, workspace, and capital. He has built relationships with local businesses, educational institutions, and government officials to create a supportive environment for tech companies to flourish. One of the CDC's key milestones has been the recent development of the 92,000 square foot Charleston Tech Center, a hub for local tech businesses to work, collaborate, and grow. The center offers flexible office space, access to business resources, entrepreneur education, and networking opportunities, making it an attractive location for tech companies ranging from the startups to publicly traded companies. Good Lord, I'm just going
to
stop right there and let you kind of go on.
He's a very impressive man.
To talk about how that got started here. I mean, what you came from Kuwait out of nowhere and decided to pick Charleston of all places. I know it wasn't the direct path that you were thinking of, but you were so open-minded that you just made the best of any situation, I feel like, didn't you?
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is interesting. It's a twist of fate, as I like to call it, how I ended up in Charleston.
I love it.
And I was originally scheduled to go to school at Fairleigh Dickinson University in Hackensack, at the Hackensack campus in New Jersey. And they had oversubscribed their foreign student quota, for lack of a better word. And they said, hey, listen, Ernest, you know, last in, first out, we'll take you the following semester. And I didn't want to lose 6 months, I guess. And so there was a gentleman who worked with my father in Kuwait who said, hey, Andy, there's this place in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Your son can go there, and if he wants to transfer back to New Jersey, that'd be fine. And as I said, the rest is history. I came here and never left.
And that was the late 80s?
And that was in the in the early 80s.
Early 80s.
It was in the early 80s, and so I had just finished. It's interesting the way the Indian education system works. You finish your high school, and then you go into what they call pre-university college.
Okay.
But this is where you decide whether you're going to be a banker, an engineer, or a doctor.
Okay.
And they have these tracks. And so I was in the first of 2 years of that when my parents made a decision. And this was not something that my parents were sort of unique in this regard. There was this trend, basically, for parents to send their kids to Europe and in America for studies.
Okay.
And not necessarily.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like and you know, the reputation of, you know, there's a lot of angst around K-12, but then you start talking about higher ed, and, you know, American institutions are still known around the world as, you know, top notch in terms of higher ed. So, you know, it was this, let's follow that pattern.
And, yeah.
And lo and behold, you know, so here's a kid born in Kuwait, you know, who's now, then from there, I ended up at about 13 going to a boarding school run by Jesuits. And which was, I tell you, you know, then when we start thinking about discipline.
Yeah.
I think it was at the level that I'd never experienced in my life before, and came with, in my case, because I was sort of a mediocre student, came with my share of canings.
Oh my! So, were your parents strict too?
No, not so strict. And I think at the end of the day, it was the logistics, because of the school closing in Kuwait, not wanting to have to go into Kuwait City.
Okay.
So it was that logistics, and also, you know, the desire for good education, and perhaps the fact that, you know, a little bit of discipline went a long way.
I guess.
And I think that, you know, it's at the time you don't appreciate it, but that discipline kind of shapes the man you're going to be later on in life. So you may not like it then, but I love it today, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
Right.
So you know, Dad worked in the oil industry. You know, there was nothing else actually. Quite on, at that time, it was primarily the Kuwait economy was driven primarily by the discovery and production and export of oil.
Okay.
And it's a different place today, but back then, you know, it was just kind of developing. Yeah. So. That's what brought me to Charleston.
So College of Charleston brought you to Charleston.
College of Charleston. I ended up going to the College of Charleston and graduate. Although I did try to escape a couple of times, I got accepted to, you know, school in back in New Jersey.
Right.
You went back.
Got accepted to school in Florida at the Florida Institute of Tech. Because I was kind of thinking I'd go to, you know, more of a technical degree.
I can see that.
But by now it's kind of spoiled. So I spent like 3 weeks in one place and one in the other.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I'm coming back here.
Mm-hmm.
And so just finished up my education at the College of Charleston. Lovely place.
Yes.
And then you got your master's from the University of South Carolina.
Yeah. So at the time, there was this joint program with the College of Charleston where you could get your degree that was offered by the University of South Carolina in Charleston. You had to spend a couple of classes up there. It was too convenient. And what's interesting about that, I was actually heading post-graduation. I was heading towards an MBA, and there was an advisor, faculty advisor, Sam Hines, actually Dr. Hines, who recommended getting a master's in public administration. And his rationale behind that was that the public sector needed to more professionals with a business mindset in government, and that's where it was heading. And I bought in. And I'm not sure that's where it was heading, but that was what was represented to me. And so I headed in, got my master's in public administration. And here's the one thing that I chose to do was I chose to run my time in the public sector like I was in a private enterprise.
Smart.
So I bought a very business-like approach. So you can see everything about career-wise was not the kind of person you would find in government, all the way to, I would be in meetings, I'd be in presentations, and people would look at me, who do you work for? You don't sound
like can't you tell I'm the
you
boss?
You don't sound a government, like a government guy.
He wasn't quite the boss yet. He was still coming up at that point.
But he's acting like the boss, is
so
good quality
that
to
was
have.
In college, getting your master's.
Yes.
Yep.
And you took the government.
The public service route?
Yeah,
exactly. The public, you know, so what...
You were swimming upstream the whole time.
Exactly. You know, so it was public administration versus business administration. And the little caveat was, it's only four more classes to get your MBA if that's what you want.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of like, I'm in. I'm pregnant with the MPA.
Okay. So
public administration. And then I come in to the city, and my first exposure to the city was an internship that was required to graduate.
Okay.
Where was this internship?
This was I had a colleague in school, I guess a classmate, who was at the City of Charleston. She says, come on over and spend, you know, 4 months at the City of Charleston.
Wow.
Nice.
And so that was my first, you know, sort of experience, I guess, in coming in. And, you know.
So what's keeping you here in Charleston?
So, you know, it's really interesting because you have, as a student, or you have... So first of all, as I said, you know, by a twist of fate, I'm in Charleston.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, what about, you know, and you tend to have there's this tendency to kind of look over your shoulder and go, what about the bigger cities?
Mm-hmm.
What about the New Yorks? What about the DCs? They're what about the Californias? What about, and it's states. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily cities.
Yeah.
But then what's really interesting is, so I started visiting these places when I was a student. And I would always kind of come in, I'd always come back, and I'm like, oh my God, I mean, this place is just great. And, you know, after a lot of thinking about it and being at the College of Charleston, I realized that more than anything else, Charleston had a soul.
Yeah.
It does.
And a lot of cities might be great cities, but they don't have a soul. So then I start, I'm very sort of analytical and sort of introspective about some of these things, and I'm like, it's the size. It's the size of the city, right? And I didn't think of the city as this big, giant mass. I just thought of the peninsula, which was my kind of world when I was in college. I could walk from one end to the other if you really wanted to do it. But really, you get into it. Now, remember, growing up in Kuwait, there's plenty of money.
Sure.
You know, a lot of advantages to being there. But there was livability because we had all these facilities and everything else. But there was something unique about Charleston. So I attributed it to, if I would say characteristically, how would you define it? It was the geography, right? Being in this really great climate, a coastal environment where you can just get to the water's edge in a hurry. It was the people, you know, consistently being ranked one of the friendliest cities. Well, there was a reason.
The because food people doesn't were hurt either.
Exactly. There was genuinely the food. Oh, my gosh. I mean, the food scene has
Next
always
level.
Been kind of amazing. I'll go to other cities and I come back and I'm like, wow, I didn't really have a great meal when I was there, but I'm back. And, you know, that kind of. So I think you talk about the food scene, you talk about the make of the people, you talk about the geography and all these things, and you actually feel like a person.
Right.
And that was important. So that's what kept me. And then professionally, I was in a very unique situation, right? So by now, I'm reporting directly to Joe Riley. And so, you know, fast forward a little bit, I end up getting married, you know, and my wife moves from the Middle East. She was in Abu Dhabi, moves to Charleston. And, you know, and so she falls in love with the place much like I had, except she falls in love with it more than I did.
Okay.
So there was
that works out good for you,
exactly,
though.
So there's this reluctance to kind of like professionally you're thinking, okay, I'm kind of like tapped out here. I've got to like, you know, as my sister would say, go and get a real job. You know? So I had to start thinking about, okay, what's next? But I had this very unique situation I was in, and I realized, again, you know, just through this process of kind of self-discovery about myself, I realized, Ernest, you have this very unique position, right? You work for this super visionary leader. The city's in the middle of a renaissance, and what you can do is add your, you can add your areas of interest, right? So Joe Riley was all about place, building an amazing place. And I was all about the economy. So I had this sense of, so the two don't exist in a vacuum. They kind of exist together.
Right.
So I, you know, so the first half of my career with the city was actually growing the place. We were 38 square miles.
Yeah, talk about that. Like, you didn't just choose to pick Charleston to live here. You grew. You were part of that growth.
Yeah, when I had come, during my internship, so I would just go here, or go by. And there was there were like 15 doors in that office. And I made it a point to kind of, out of curiosity, what is going on in that office?
Sure.
So it was office 1 to office 15, and I knew everything that was going on. And it was like, okay, if you're going to be a city manager, you need to know everything about what's going on, right? Don't rely on somebody to report back to you, well, I did this, and it took me 3 days. Ask somebody what they're doing, try to figure out how long it took. Meet with the police chief, meet with the fire chief. So I had this kind of curiosity. And remember, I'm in public administration.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was, you know, to be a CEO of like a city or a city manager. Except I realized that I'm really not a political guy and I'm not particularly fond of politicians. Right? I'm a little more convicted. And so I realized if you serve as a city manager, if you serve at the pleasure of a politician, then you could be gone tomorrow. So the better thing to do was to become a specialist. So I had this like now elevated curiosity. So I would go through and find out what everybody did. And that's how I kind of, one of the offices was the gentleman who ran the annexation program for the city.
Right.
And he said, you know, Ernest, he says, I'm leaving. I'm moving to Atlanta. And this position is going to come open.
Okay.
And perhaps you should. And it looked like the most uninteresting job.
Right.
Every time I'd walk by, he was poring over these maps, and I was like, not interested. Except that this went on, and then his boss said, you know, we've got this role, and you should take a look at it. And then her boss said, you know, the director comes to me and says, if you're interested, perhaps you should. So that was annexation. We were 38 square miles. And again, I'm very sort of mission focused. So very quickly, when I have this brief conversation with Joe Riley about what do you want? You know, what do you want to accomplish with this role? And he says, well, we were talking about the geography and the layout. And he says, I want it all. And I'm like, okay, well, so that's the strategy then. You want it all. So I tell people, I said, in terms of annexation, because of the political environment and the legislative environment, the strategy that I adopted was not to have a strategy. So my strategy was, if you verbalized what you're going to do, you'll be shut down before you even get to the start line.
Okay.
So the way you're going to find out what the strategy is, you're going to find out not when I'm executing it, but when it is executed.
Yeah,
so you're going to read in the newspaper.
Present it when it's already.
Exactly. And the pinnacle of that was the annexation of Daniel Island into the city of Charleston.
Oh,
nobody knew what was coming. And one day you pick up the newspaper and you see the city of Charleston moves to annex Daniel Island. And Daniel Island represented 4,500 acres out of 20,000 acres that we substantially annexed in Berkeley County. So we jumped county line. But my point being that, and I remember Joe Riley referring it at one point to Charleston's Louisiana Purchase. So economically,
I was going to say, how truly spectacular to,
you know,
to,
it was,
to
what
be
like,
almost
that?
The forefront of Charleston history for all of these years.
Yeah.
That is
so cool. It was amazing. I mean, you know, and I would actually, when I first knew that the mayor had expressed some interest, I was on the island before the 526, before the infrastructure was open.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to take the back door.
And
I actually befriended the engineer who was in charge of the construction. He was with Wilbur Smith, a firm that was involved in construction of the bridge across Daniel Island.
That is down.
That is
down
amazing.
Last time I tried to get there, actually.
Yeah.
It's
so,
not working.
So
they're
really,
working on it,
exactly.
Though.
So just taking the back way, and it was really interesting and all the nuances. And there was one little shack, and it was hilarious because affectionately, I wish today that I had taken a picture then. It was called the Daniel Island City Hall. And it literally was a little hunting shack. It was used as a little venue.
That's when you have the time machine and you go back in time and you buy plots of land.
And you are
multi-millionaire now because that Daniel Island is spectacular. It's beautiful.
Exactly. But it was my point is, okay, we go from 38 square miles and it's just me.
Right.
And we're now at 100 square miles. And the one thing is, I'm not a management-oriented guy. I'm a development-minded guy. So, you know, I tell the mayor, I said, listen, I fulfilled most of the obligation. We butt up to the boundaries of the neighboring jurisdictions, being Mount Pleasant, Ravenel, and James Island. So I said, I think it's time for me to move on, you know. And he said, well, time out here. You know, what do you have in mind? And so for a guy who, as part of this annexation process, I'm in the planning department.
Right.
The annexation division was a part of planning.
Yeah.
So I started to develop this interest in urban planning and the economics associated with planning. So naturally then I honed that into economic development. And when I'm looking at economic development, I'm like, why are we engaging in a race to the bottom? Why is it that the only thing we want to talk about is cheap land,
mm-hmm.
cheap labor, cheap utilities, non-union, something unfortunately that we still do today. But the pattern, what I was seeing was our economic targets were contributing to wage growth that was non-existent. Our wages had flatlined for a decade. And then I noticed the cost of living was increasing at a tremendous rate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
yeah.
So guess what? I hearken back a little bit, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is a third world economy, the have and the have-nots. We can't have that. So I go in and this is my observation, right? And I'm like, listen, Riley's a busy guy. Don't go over there and ruminate over your observations.
Right.
You go over there, and my advice to anybody, go if you go to your boss, go to solutions.
Yes.
Don't go with conversation.
Right.
So I go in and I tell him, and I say, you know, listen, you know, Mayor, I said, this is an amazing place. You know, you've polished this lump of coal and turned it into a diamond, and I think we can go further. Except we're bought into this regional strategy of pushing cheap, and I think it might be important to add a dimension that we've not previously seen.
So this is
we're not going to do an about face. we're just going to start thinking of it in terms of diversity, economic diversity. So what you're going to do is you're going to focus on the intellectually driven industries rather than manufacturing driven industries, right? And the argument was that there will always be a place south and always be a place east where you can manufacture cheaper, but you can't steal somebody of his intellect. And that's what you want, right? So that's the highest value add, where I'm the millionaire setting the direction for the worker producing the car, the widget, right? And we can't just be focused on widgets and pushing cheap, cheap, cheap. We actually can be on the other side of it. And so I just said, if it's okay, I'm not divorcing myself, but I'm just going to focus on this aspect.
Yeah.
And that came with a little bit of angst.
I bet.
In the community, because some of us who were involved, not you know, excluding myself, were involved with the closure of the Navy base. And the mindset was, we have this economic crisis. We just need to take whatever we can get. And I'm like, okay, guys, we're over the crisis. Mm-hmm. Now we got to start ratcheting up the game. And I'm thinking to myself that this is a big geography. That when you start talking about Dorchester, Berkeley, and Charleston County, that makes up our Tri-County region, when you start eating lunch at Charleston in downtown Charleston, you're not thinking about a rural sport in Berkeley County. And you're not speaking the same language. You know?
What year was this? Just out of curiosity.
So this was getting into the late 90s.
Okay.
Right? So the perspective was, so I'm looking around and I'm thinking to myself, look at all this stuff, look at all these cities. You know, look at RTP and look at tech starting to boom, right? And the whole thing, I mean, the Y2K thing in 2000, that just kind of elevated my thinking of technology.
Right.
Number one. Number two, because of my background, growing up in a highly competitive environment in boarding school in Bangalore, India, which is Bangalore's India Silicon Valley, I am now starting to think about some of these guys and where they ended up. And when I started looking on basically where these folks were, they were all, a lot of them basically, a good 40% of them were in tech companies, and they were doing very well.
So this is how the digital corridor started to become a thing.
So you start thinking selfishly, I want some of that. You know, I mean, I want some of that for my community, right? And, okay, everything we have is great.
Right.
I'm not one of these guys saying, oh, you know, well, look. You know, I'm by nature, I'm sort of a malcontent. You know, it requires that, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, and you'd get all these awards. Oh, look at Charles, most friendly, most well, you know, most this.
You're like, it's never enough.
You know, and what I associate, I kept thinking to myself, oh my gosh, wages have flatlined.
Right.
And cost of living's going up. And these guys and gals are high-fiving in the corridor. What is wrong with you folks? We can do better. You know, we can leverage. In the meantime, I'm like, I love this place. I want to stay here. So at every Christmas, I'm like, no, yeah, I need to move. We talk to my family. I'm like, no, I'm staying here. But then again, I have this aha moment where, like, Ernest, you really can be an agent of change working for an amazing visionary. Yeah. And you've got a proven track record going from 38 square miles to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a certain... You have some professional coins that in your pocket, right? And this leads to the whole... So I'm going in totally unaware of where we can end up, talking to somebody who's completely unaware of what the hell I'm talking about, right? But there's just this element of trust that I don't know, but this guy will somehow end up on the right side of the things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sharing in the meantime all of the data that I'm processing from the Indian economy, the economies of India and China. Mm. So I didn't go in, contrary to what most people would think, I didn't go in blind, right? India is to intellect what China is to manufacturing. So guess what I did? I immediately started to focus on India. And it was Jack Welch who really kind of like tipped me over the edge. And he said, when GE opened a facility in India, we went for cost. And we didn't realize the quality of the workforce. And that's when I realized, you know, that we have got to start focusing on this. And so, and I said, this is India. And look what we have. We've got like Shangri-La over here. I don't want to leave. And so in order not to leave very selfishly, there were two things.
You got to invent the next
one. I got to create that place that allows me to exist in Charleston and not move.
Uh-huh.
And selfishly, now there's a second element. I have my daughter's now 2 years old. And I'm like, okay, what is she going to do? Right? So now this commitment just strengthens. It just solidifies. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, guy, you're not leaving, right? Because
this is where I'm going to be.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to be. And my daughter, I'm you know, the true test is going to be, where is my daughter going to go when she graduates, right? So that sets the basis
for
the Digital Quarter's mission.
Love it.
And the mission is very simple. To create a diverse economy under the premise that resilient and economic and a resilient community is tied to a diverse economy, right? Economic resilience is tied to a diverse economy. So we got to create a diverse economy. Remember, I didn't tell the other guys pushing cheap and non-union and everything else. Please, by all means.
Do you, right?
You know?
Sure.
I'm not going to focus on the elephants. I'm kind of chasing the gazelles. You know, different kind of, it's a different strategy, right? Number one. Number two, I said, I want my kids to be able to live and work in their town. If they choose to leave, that's their prerogative. But it's incumbent on me to create the opportunities that allow them to stay over here. Now it's a shame on you versus a shame on me, right? My community affords you these jobs at a competitive wage, all things considered. You want to go to New York and California making twice as much? Well, your cost of living is almost twice as much, right?
True story.
So let's just kind of have, you know, have a time out here and just talk about, you know, so create great jobs, diversify the economy, and the third one was we got to raise the per capita wages. You can't bump along the bottom and let people avail themselves of all the niceties. That was in 2001 when we launched. Those were the objectives. Those objectives are very, very much with us today, right? So we set them up broadly enough, but still narrowly focused to where we didn't have to constantly, you know how you get these groups sometimes and they're like every board meeting at the end of the year, okay, how are we going to change our strategy?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're not. We never changed the strategy. Mm-hmm. Tactics we did, but not strategy.
Sure.
I love
right?
that.
Right?
And playing the tactics. A long game.
Absolutely, and you couldn't do it any other way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
well,
leads
really was
to
a long game.
Which leads to a second right mm-hmm. kind of takeaway from this whole thing. It's like, so you get out and you're telling these folks. I remember like it was yesterday. I'm speaking to this group, mm-hmm. a large group of very notable Charlestonians, business people, and such. And I'm telling them where we could be. And about this whole tech thing mm-hmm. that I've got planned. And in about 2 minutes into that lunch presentation, I'm feeling like a Martian. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, Ernest, they don't get it. And so it was just so far out there.
Yeah.
This is an interesting point. There's no crisis, right? Why do people have to act only when there's a crisis? The problem is that when you don't have a crisis and things are okay, what you do is you cultivate apathy. It's all good, man.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you're apathetic is when you get hammered, right? Mm-hmm. And I used the great example of the rubber industry in Goodyear. We won't have any competition. We're in a hire. We're the kings, the auto industry. And all of a sudden, Asia starts rising. We're going to keep it the way it is. Oh, Look at that tin can. I mean, the first Toyotas that came with the first Hondas. No. We are this, you know. And all of a sudden, they become less and less relevant. So it is not crisis that leads to relevance or irrelevance. It's apathy. And I said, we can get apathetic in looking at these accolades. And I'm like, can you drill down behind that accolade and put an economic value to it? So if 10 was the tops and one, they were like threes and fours.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I mean, you know, and this had nothing to do with my great desire to make Charleston a great place. It had everything to do with being able to stay here because my wife loved it, and I have a kid, and basically making sure that the economic opportunities would accrue to her. But the reality is, when you look at some of these very wealthy people, they're not selfless and community-minded. They're extremely selfish. They become that later in life. So I just said that we just have to go at it. And by the way, a takeaway was, now I'm coming out. Not only is the audience not bought in, but the economic development partners are like, we're not bought in because we don't know what you're talking about.
It's still early.
It's very early.
Mm-hmm.
And their point is that this is like professional suicide, man. We're not going to come anywhere near you. And so it was like very lonely, right? A characteristic that I absolutely share with an entrepreneur, so I can relate. You don't have any money. You've got this great idea. And nobody's kind of hanging with you.
Right.
And you're extremely lonely. You're not sleeping at night. And you're like, but I'm going to win.
Yes.
You're going to win.
Failure is not an option.
Exactly.
Right? Like I can show that resonate. Anytime I'm sitting with an entrepreneur and he says, you know, they tried to bump me off. They tried to do this. They tried to screw me. I'm like, oh, I can. Because it just happened at a different level.
Yeah.
But the way I managed it was the prize is the community. The prize is not your partners.
Focus on the prize.
And if your partners don't get it, when there is some validation of your model, they will come on.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, they have come on, right?
As time has gone by. You've had some trials and tribulations through all of this. I know you're a visionary and you had this idea of what you wanted, but there's had to been some kind of struggle.
Well, years
it
of
was
time, sure.
It was an absolute struggle. And
how many years did it take to get to a good point?
You know, we're 23 years in.
Yeah,
but, right. But in terms of, I think, sir, it took about 10 years for people to kind of start to see it. You know, where you're underwater in that wave, and then you're finally, you know, not gasping for air every time you come up and that kind of thing. And ironically, it was the development of a physical facility, the first incubator on the corner of East Bay and Calhoun that is now a Hilton resort property. Mm-hmm. It was that, you know, we all, not because, I'm not saying this, you know, started being judgmental, but the reality is that we're all kind of lowest common denominator. And when you can tangibly see something, you go, oh, that's what you're doing. And you can see people in the building moving around and, oh, he's doing this tech and these. And all of a sudden they get it and like people are peering in the window. It was the old Hollywood video. Remember? Video's never going away. The apathy. Well, it went away. Yeah. And streaming came in. You know, and, you know, Netflix knocked them off. Yeah. You know, that kind of.
Yeah. Internet will never happen.
So the bottom line was,
in my movie theaters.
You know, two in terms of trials and tribulations, you know, it's easier for me to say today that you will be tested,
right?
And you can't take your eye off the prize. But I'll tell you the one thing that is, the one thing that I like to tell everybody, especially in a marketing world, in a world of innovation, collaboration is overrated. Right.
Hmm.
I don't know about that.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm hearing you out.
So I know that, you know, you got to be a team player, Ernest. You know, you got to go along with the regional plan. Well, nobody stopped long enough to understand that from a region, we are comprised, we're a quilt of different cities operating in a region.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that the other thing that I realized is your economic strategy or your community strategy needs to be a unified series of disaggregated strategies. So by doing the Charleston Digital Court and focusing on high wage and more rifle-like and not shotgun, I now had disaggregated from the regional strategy. So I was really the bastard who broke away.
I was going to say, you're writing your own script at this point.
You know, and so now if you think you're lonely, you get even lonelier because it's like you're not just the guy, you're the bad guy. You know, you're not the guy who just kind of went out in the cold. So the idea was that there's more pressure now to produce and kind of bring them along. And I think that company X relocates, company Y, 17, 30, 40. Well, you know, at 700 companies plus, nobody would question, you know, that it was smart. But we had to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And the reason I say, Stephanie, back to full circle, you said, no, why?
Yeah.
If I had gone along and collaborated, and I would have just been internally just very disgruntled. But I took some of that externally, and it manifested itself in the development of this three-prong strategy to build a high-wage economy, and those were the three things.
Sure.
So in terms, you know, so my point, you know, to
an audience. You'd let it. I mean, you didn't have to collaborate or talk about anything. You let it, and then everybody else kind of jumps on board, and then they can collaborate their own spin, but it's this is our mission.
And keep in mind, every time I surfaced, I was, for lack of a better word, misunderstood of my intention, of the, you know, and it was hard to communicate a vision. Now, keep in mind, I'm communicating a vision.
Yeah.
Well, when honestly, I don't know how things are going to gel.
What was that?
I don't know how things are going to gel.
Right.
I mean,
of course
so I'm kind of, it's like, trust me, it'll be okay.
Yeah, but.
And I am rife with self-doubt.
So what are you doing, though? Are you making, like, how to get those first 18 companies?
Yeah.
What did you do?
So, well, I didn't really have to do anything.
Okay.
Now, this is what most people don't understand, right? If you're going to develop a strategy, the first thing you should do is take stock of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
How can I go attract Stephanie to Charleston if I don't say that Mike's already there and Mike is one of 18?
Right.
There you go.
Right? So in my case, we might have had 18, but the public perception, there was one. And the one, the Ellis Island of the tech industry in Charleston was Blackbaud.
Oh, okay.
That's a good get right there.
Okay.
Right?
Blackbaud, wow.
And so we just talked about Blackbaud, and we talked about Blackbaud, and Blackbaud was attracting more employees. Yeah. And what happens is that when you're attracting people who, employees, you have two types of personalities. The guy just wakes up one morning and says, oh, there's a better way to do this. I'm going to do this. I was in the shower, and I basically figured it out. The dominant entrepreneur is one who has been in an environment and has figured out a better way to do it, whatever it is. And they break off, and then they go put a little team together. And it might be exactly something they were doing just in a different way, or it could be a totally different batch of stew. And we're going to do this. So the initial crop of companies that were springing up were individuals, professionals, who now basically are feeling their entrepreneurial oats and have left Blackbaud to do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it got going. And Nate DePore, he was one of those individuals. He was a benefit focus. And he talked about it as cell multiplication, right? You'll get one, and the one will get two, and the two goes. It becomes exponential at some point.
Yeah.
And you reach a certain point where you're not just generating three new companies. You're generating 50 new companies, 25 new companies, half which are failing, but because the ones are succeeding, you're not worried about the ones that are failing. And the ones who fail are not real failures. They were just testing the waters, and they went on to do other things, right? So failure is good. So among other things,
agreed.
We embraced failure, right?
Agreed.
I couldn't because I was talking to a friend of mine at Nike, and he said, Ernest, he says, the incubation period when you're trying to do something like this in a community is way more difficult than the incubation for developing a new pair of sneakers and hoping it sticks. Right? So that was where I think I had to take a reasonably conservative approach. You can't play with the community's brand knowing that many communities that have tried to do this have failed.
Sure.
Right? So the idea was go in, and oh, by the way, if I thought I could just keep plowing ahead, I didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had $18,000. That was the budget for, it was just me.
It's more than what AMA has, so
you know,
there we go.
You know,
that's true. There's something.
You know, and it was talking to a lot of people, right? And what you do is you can't, everybody's got an opinion. So what you've got to do is you've got to talk to five to see that now these, you know, there's outliers, but then what's in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you look at it on a bell curve. I just got to look at, so that's how it started to develop. And then you have to, remember, this is all being produced now inside a public environment.
Right.
So you've got this legislative sausage, you got to go, the incentives that had to be put together, the brand. So you're managing just multiple things. You're making sure the data's coming in because we didn't supposedly have the data connections to do this.
Yep.
The professionals are, you know, a little reticent because they're going to work for Blackbaud and it fails. Now you got to take these five guys who left Blackbaud and started their own companies. So if you don't play the long game, then I'm just playing a game of job hopping and basically, it is easy to benefit yourself versus benefiting community. And so my situation enabled me to focus on community over self.
Amen.
Well, at some point, marketing played a role into help growing this.
Well,
it did.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you.
Selfless community. That's our key connection. Takeaway right there.
Okay. Right. So you know, remember I told you, you know, now I'm super lonely.
Oh,
I've got 18, funny. You know, I mean, but you know,
he's got the so, wife, a child,
and I've got, and yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like faking it really well. And I'm convincing everybody. It's like, don't worry, we'll be okay. And this will be okay.
Right.
The numbers are trending up. So I'm like, good. Oh my God, you know, so I'm looking in the mirror every day before I go to work. Is Riley better? Is the community better? And am I better? Right.
You're no longer the bad guy.
Right. And well, you know, well, I'm thinking I'm like a rock star, but I'm like, in my own world.
In your own
right?
world, yeah.
In my own world, because yeah. it's taken. There's a lag, right?
I know
right.
about that
you
world. Know? I'm
and
there.
So, now, so it's interesting. So now, like, okay, marketing, right? And what's really interesting, right, about marketing is, you know, the with the lack of resources, I'm like, what is the one, where can I go to tell the story and preserve? Let me back up for just a minute. There's product development and there's marketing.
Yes.
Where can I go and develop the product that's so strong that now I got something to market?
I like it.
Rather than what some companies
do. That's a good
strategy. Yeah. You know, the old fake it before you make it. They'll go market, and then they'll go build a product. And by the way, it can work for a private company, right?
Yeah.
But my point is that it was just kind of in my DNA to go build a product. And you can't get slapped down. You go present it. Okay, you didn't get slapped down there. You're walking out with a smile on your face. Nobody, you know, everything's pleasant. But they don't really believe, but that validation will come. So what was interesting was, guess who I realized, because we're doing something that is very unique, I don't know what their motivations were, because ultimately if we didn't fail, they might have hung Riley out to dry, but the newspaper outlets in the region
right.
become my PR
yep.
and my marketing arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so my press relationships become extremely important.
Earned media? Right? Was that what that's called? Yeah. Earned media?
Right. And my point Students. Is that I had to, so we would have entrepreneurs go direct to the media, and we met with this guy, and he's such an idiot, and he's not talking to us, and I would, before, and Ernest, we were thinking about writing the story about this meeting, and I said, please write the story, but let me give you this, this, and this. Right? So the entrepreneurs thought they could just, we're going to see the government guy, you know, how can he possibly be right?
What's he going to say?
Yeah. So when I would push back and say, well, that doesn't have any legs. Imagine being told that we have a search engine that's better than Google and it's not patented.
Sure.
And by the way, you should be investing in our company. I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't think so.
So you became right? the tech guru, kind of.
So what you do early on, you, by virtue of the fact there is a now dedicated resource you can come and speak to, you also have a dedicated resource that will push back and will call you a bluff. Mm-hmm. Right, and what did I do? I was completely ignorant. But all these people, this is a one-man shop, Stephanie. You know, everybody's like, oh, you must have 10 staff members.
Mm.
I'm jealous. Actually, I'm not.
You're like, no.
Because I've got 50 members of the community who want to offer guidance. So I've got them on speed dial, depending on what the topic was. You're coming to meet with me about, what are you with me meeting about? So at 7 o'clock, I'd send an email saying, can you just drop something? And so I come across as being intelligent. So I would get this, like, with white paper on whoever.
It's all about these relationships.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I can't buy this and put him on my team. First of all, I had no money, right? So I couldn't buy it anyway. But my point is, even if I had the money, I couldn't buy the expertise that these people brought to the party.
Right.
And the people who brought this to the party, just they didn't want to be found. They just wanted to offer the advice, but they were not coming back if I didn't execute. So execution of anything became paramount.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't talk about it and don't strategize and don't go not do another study.
Don't do another study.
Just go do it, right? Because yeah. it's a very binary response when you go do something. It's either, oh, this was a fail or this was a pass. And if it's a pass, keep doing more. And if it, don't do that again. You know?
Right.
So learn. We're like, yeah, and I told, and one of the things in terms of the relationships from a marketing standpoint, I told the guys, I said, there are factors outside of my control that will dictate the community's success. But one thing I'll give you is I will call it very objectively.
Right.
Right. I will tell you when we're wrong, and I'll tell you this, when we're wrong, you will always find me. So you will always, as a reporter, what happens if there's any bad news?
Oh, sure. Get on.
You know, nobody wants to be found.
Yep.
Call me and I will take that and I'll tell you
why. You're
very transparent. Yeah, until today, right?
Yep.
So marketing became important. Now, so what happens is you're working on it and you're, you know, I tell people, I said, it's, It's the guy in the kitchen approach, right? I'm in the kitchen just cooking away, and word, you know, permeates to the ether that this guy's got some good food, so I don't have to have a host, right?
True, yeah.
So because they just keep coming. The risk you run if you don't market is that certain things are changing in the front of the house, and you haven't paid attention, and you're in the back of the house.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, gluten-free. People don't want to do this. They don't want. They stopped eating beef. It's all about this. And if you don't know,
right.
If you don't get out of the kitchen every now and again to take the pulse that I did very effectively in the early days, you're screwed.
I love that.
Okay. What is the pulse? The culture. The pulse there is
the culture. The preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have said that? You know, hey, you know, my wife, or I'm not going to drop off the video. I'm going to order videos from Netflix. And who would have said when we went from Netflix, we're going to start streaming? Oh, this is a little kludgy. It's not working really well. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They said, oh, no, Blockbuster. No, we're going to buy it for a lot of money. And you know, Wayne's has got a lot of money. He'll force it to work.
Right.
So my point is that don't start, I call it basically, you know, don't start drinking your own Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention to what's going on. And it's so heavily nuanced that if you don't stop talking and you start listening a little bit or you start observing, you're screwed.
There we go.
So that is
a very key takeaway mm-hmm. right there.
So the bottom line is, but let's talk about marketing. So we go along, and things are not moving.
You're relying 100% on the press.
Relying 100% on the press, and even realize that the press was coming in and harvesting some of the stories and then writing stories beyond. You know,
yeah.
So they wouldn't. They didn't want to tell you that they were just coming to you. You know. To kind
pick of, your brain, well, in a sense.
Yeah, essentially what they were doing was they were looking at what I was writing. And this was what the entrepreneurs were saying. We're doing some really great stuff, and nobody wants to write about it. It was like, hello. So I played a report. I'm writing it, and we're publishing it.
Good for you.
Because remember, I'm a one-man shop now. I got to do it all, right? So now I have the local outlet saying, no, we'll take that off your hands. We'll do it. And then what happened was, if you don't write this properly,
yeah,
I won't be on the phone the next time you call.
Mm-hmm.
No, you won't be credited as an expert.
Yeah, so what happens is now you're putting something that is, you're putting a level of accountability on it.
Yeah.
Right? So that went on for a while. And then you realize it's not that we did not engage in marketing. So now we when the CVB is out marketing the CDC, the Charleston Visitors Bureau is outmarking the Charleston Digital Quarter by a factor of 99.9 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Marketing works.
It does.
Right.
That's what people think of. This is an amazing place
to
recreate.
Travel and Leisure Magazine.
Yeah. This is an amazing place to recreate. And so we're just going to recreate. And guess who's recreating? These amazing tech folks, these amazing venture capitalists, these amazing. They don't come to town to work or to explore. They come to work to recreate. Golf, food, all the things that we love. Music, you know, that kind of thing. Nice people.
So you built a culture from within.
Yeah, so what I said is, hey, wait a minute. We got to start slowly kind of pushing this message out.
Yeah.
Don't make a mistake. How it manifested itself is secondary, but we did have to market. And so we would tell people who would talk it up, you know, that kind of thing, you know, in the way they could. The papers are going to report, as a very matter of fact.
Right.
But what I
hopefully
didn't realize is that the newspapers reporting something, the news report, I say, you know, we're in a different place today, but the news outlets reporting what we did was the ultimate truth in advertising.
Right.
This guy is not trying to sell us. They're just trying to inform us on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it became more prolific.
There we go.
Because with the success, the press releases, I'm just telling you. One day I tried I got this amazing press release about this company, and I got a phone call from the reporter and said, we're here to talk about what's going on in the community. We're not the PR agency for that company, Company X.
Right.
So I got that. But the bottom line
is, that script out, didn't you?
So now you have enough time. So we say, okay, we've played in the education space, and let's, as we well know, since the beginning of time, Charleston has been shaped by people who moved into the community. To some extent, that hasn't changed. And by the way, here's something that just was dropped in my inbox last month.
Mm.
The state of South Carolina was ranked the number one stayed in the country for in-migration. Okay? And Charleston was ranked the number one city in the state of South Carolina for in-migration. So we at the top of the top.
Yeah.
I see.
Right? Now, here's what I would say, right? That can somewhat be a problem, except the people who are coming in younger. They're coming in with 20 years to contribute to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in more educated. They're coming in more financially well off, which is, to some extent, driving everything up. But remember, pricing and these functions are all a function of desirability.
And that's one thing. We're attracting bigger businesses.
Yeah. So let's not go shoot the goose.
Sure.
Or the geese as they fly south, I guess, and don't leave. You know, so they didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The thing that we need to do is, again, keep your eye on the price. Focus on growing the wages.
Right.
So with that comes a more competitive, and that's what the pandemic did. The pandemic forced Charleston-based companies to pay wages commensurate with what's going on national level. It caused a 20% bump.
I wasn't aware of that. That's an interesting stat right there.
Okay. If you look at it's the first time, I say 20, it's more like 12%.
Okay.
But a year-over-year job, we do an annual survey, which we've been doing since 2003.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it jumped 12% in 1 year was
significant.
It would level the playing field.
Again, now, you know, we're not hearsay. We're actually tracking this data and we're saying, attributed to what?
Right.
Right? So on the receiving end, knock, knock, who are you? No, Boston. Knock, knock, who are you? California. Knock, knock, who are you? Coming out of Texas. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing
my
these people
street.
Come in.
Yeah.
And that is a good thing for our community. Right?
I think so, too.
And the opportunities that exist, a very important point to make, and this is the broad appeal of a show like this, right? When I tell folks that the makeup of a tech company is comprised only of about 20 to 25% of technologists.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it are non-technical roles, customer success, design, marketing, you know, mm-hmm. PR,
yeah.
Accounting, financial, legal. So nobody should be reticent to fully embrace the growth of tech.
Right.
Right. And that's
lots
something
of jobs
that,
to be had right there.
You know, so the multiplier effect in terms of not just in terms of the incomes, but the multiplier effect of the jobs that have become available.
Yeah.
The other thing is that when you get in, you have to be reasonably tech savvy, which is, and I'll get to that in just a minute, which is why we created the CDC Learning Center. So yesterday we had a class of attendees ranging from 22 to 60 on an introduction to ChatGPT class, right?
All right.
So what we're saying is,
what did you teach?
take all of this, right, and create opportunities for everybody, and don't exclude anybody from coming to industry. There might be a late bloomer later.
Right.
So my point is that you're reasonably tech savvy. Boss, I can come in and I can run your marketing, and I can use AI to make things more efficient.
Yes.
But guess what? You didn't have to have a technical background to do that. So my point is, as technology permeates every aspect of our lives, it now means that everyone out there is now fair game to come into the industry,
right?
And that is a beautiful thing, right? That I had never thought that. We kept talking about convergence in the 2000s. Well, by 2010 now, it was very evident of how things are converging. And by 2020, it was absolutely in full bloom. And things like ChatGPT, the fact is, Stephanie, that you can say, hey, ChatGPT, can you write the code to develop a little website to keep my family recipes, and you can get the code snippet, that section of code, that you just drop in and create a website doing it.
Which
that
took,
is wild.
You know, hours
that,
on top of hours.
Which absolutely
of
would
coding.
Require that you have to communicate with three people and everything else. And oh, by the way, since you're already design oriented professional and SEO and that kind of thing, you can say, okay, now. But my point is that two young ladies at the College of Charleston can actually create an agency just using. 23 years I've been doing this.
I was using ChatGPT right before I got here.
ChatGPT?
Yeah.
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 The young adults that are coming out of the Charleston, the College of Charleston, are amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
They're so smart. We were there doing a speed networking thing last Monday or Tuesday or whatever. I was thrown back.
Yep.
I was like, these kids, young adults, pardon me, are so smart.
So smart. It's impressive.
Much, so then my next thought was, how do we keep them here?
Well, I think the, again, I come back to, a question comes up, right? What are you doing to attract entrepreneurs? What are you doing to attract students? So let's not be foolhardy and believe that what we got going on here is the best thing since sliced bread. Let's fundamentally accept that every community has an earnest there, and they're all trying just that hard.
Okay.
So we have to earn our stripes every day, which means that you can't just exist. You can't become apathetic. Whew, look at this great success. I drew a chart for somebody, and I said, 2010, 2001 to 2010, 10 years, we were at basically about a 28% trajectory. From 2010, crisis, subprime, everything at the bottom dropped out. We go from that to another 30% trajectory because tech moved in and everything became tech-enabled, right? You know, tech is the answer to...
Yeah.
Okay. So then you get to 2020 and you think, oh my gosh, you know, we're all cooked here. Boom. Tech took off again. What were the two factors that contributed to our success since 2020 forward? The fact that working remote and working distributed accelerated at a rate like we've never seen and won't see again in our life.
Exactly.
It was a game changer, right?
It definitely was.
Which is what's causing these, you know, the debt in some of these office buildings to be a challenge.
Uh-huh.
Okay, number one, in terms of what happened in 2020. But number two, wage levels came up. So that's a silver lining. So we got smarter people moving at a higher rate than ever before. They were moving, by the way. This trickle... Somebody went and turned the spigot on a little more.
Yes.
Right? And that's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it just breeds fire into something that is successful to where now what you have to guard against is what I come back to when I started. Why am I here? I'm here for livability.
Mm-hmm.
Don't jam up your livability because the next community is waiting in the wings.
Right?
They'll come to us next because housing prices will be lower, congestion's not as bad. It's all the things that we want about livability. Livability, the tech industry, is a lifestyle industry, right? It's a high lifestyle industry. I want to be on the water.
Yeah, because you can be anywhere and work.
I want culture. We didn't even talk about the cultural offerings of the community that we're punching above our weight class in Little Charleston, South Carolina. Okay, maybe not so little, but we're still little on a relative basis.
Small city, right? So, yes.
The idea is to engage. I mean, I think to your point, Mike.
We were a small city before you got here. You know what I mean?
I just fill them up with people making a lot of money.
There you go. You
know? So you alluded to the fact that the kids are coming out more savvy.
Yeah.
And what we can do is we can create opportunities for them.
I want to hear.
So Amy, not Amy, Megan, graduated from USC.
Okay.
And her uncle happens to run the EO organization, and he says, you know, you might want to talk to Ernest over there. You
need EO, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Entrepreneur
organization. Yep. You know, and you might want to talk to Ernest. And so she graduates from USC, business degree, and she comes in. She's just very dedicated. Next thing is, she's got a job, right? There were 7 interviews. She was the only one from on the ground in Charleston.
Okay.
Right? She's got a job. But what's significant about that job? First of all, she's already several thousand above the per capita for the region.
Okay. Right? All right.
And so she keeps it up. Now she's going to be 50% above the per capita of the region. That is a young person's journey into Charleston. There's plenty of those. There's more of those today than there's ever been. And it is not my responsibility to say, to single you out and single, you know, because of the fact that tech is basically now embedded in every aspect of our life, there are more jobs in more diverse sectors.
Mm-hmm.
So it touches every sector, and you can get it. There are more job opportunities, career opportunities available in Charleston to freshly minted graduates.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
As I like to say, you know, sometimes when I come full circle in these things and I have a PowerPoint up on stage, I said, okay, we start with 3 simple objectives. Job opportunities for the kids, mm-hmm. which is what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Race per capita wages and economic diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll start by saying these, and then I'll end by saying, hey, we're more economically diverse since the city and community was founded in 1670. We have more job opportunities than we've ever had in every area. And our wages basically are now, I mean, the last time we did the survey, we the wages in the tech sector on average are 2.5 times the per capita for the region.
Oh,
wow.
Right? Okay.
So my point being that by any stretch of the imagination, whether they came along or not, the community has benefited from some of the things the Digital Quarter has done, and it will continue on.
Yeah.
But in order now, I said, you know, I talked about the trajectory, right? So between 2020 and 2030, in order to stay competitive, we have to invest in key infrastructure that takes us to the next level.
Okay, such right? as?
So the idea of having, we have a lot of defense companies here. Okay. They don't have a SCIF.
A what now?
A SCIF is a secure compartmentalized information facility.
Oh, I got one of those.
It is the.
I don't. I really don't have one of those.
It is the only place where you can take top secret federal property and discuss it. So you got to go to NIWC. You got to go to federal establishment to kind of. But when you can have one that anybody can come to, and they can deal in top, you know, and have that level of top security, okay. That's an investment, and that is more expensive than number two. Where is the lab space that an individual can go and say, I want to just go tinker around? And I'll draw this. This is okay. So I'm going to just kind of finish the physically. It's the development of a SCIF that is without public investment. There are arguments being made around the country. Well, without the private sector drive it. Well, you know what? Without the private sector drive it. Try going to one of these entrepreneurs and saying, Bob, I've got this idea for this digital.
Yeah.
And see how far you'd get.
Right.
It'd throw you out in about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But Riley was at least indulgent. He wasn't a believer, but he was indulgent. And he became a believer, right? So my point is there are people making arguments around the country that it is the private sector that will drive innovation. I'm going to tell you right now that without the public sector, without the city of Charleston, we would not be having this conversation today.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
They bought a piece of land worth $4 million today and gave it to the foundation for $1. We leveraged that to build the tech center. It was a $54 million production. We have a second piece of land, and that'll be another $50 plus million production.
Okay.
Right? But who seeded it? Who was my seed investor? It was a public entity.
Mm-hmm.
My point now is we've grown big enough to where, in order the next level of success is going to come from collaboration between the state, who benefit. They collect 7% of the taxes on the $120,000
income. They've got skin in the game.
They've got the county. Mm-hmm. The entire region is going to have to. It has now gone from being, I tell people, I said, enough of the I. We will only succeed moving forward if it becomes a we.
Sure.
And that's a wholehearted we, not a kind of namby-pamby. Yeah. You're in, man.
You're in.
We're in.
You know, where your leg's going to get chopped off.
Well, you've been doing that since the 80s. So.
Well, you know.
Sounds like.
You've
been all in.
I've been all in. I mean, what do I do, right? So somebody said to me, how the hell can you go from annexation to tech? Uh-huh. And I said, well, what do you want to do tomorrow if I'm in? We're in because, you know what? I tie it back to where I started. It's those Jesuits.
They beat you into it, huh?
Yeah. I would have loved
to know you back in the day.
You know, it's kind of funny, right? It's the Jesuits, and I love to help people. Like, I never got from 90 to 100. I was like, quite honestly, I was in the mid-70s to mid-80s, right? So I was like the underdog.
Yeah.
And I developed this. I can go watch a game, and someone's like, who are you pulling for? Well, I'm pulling for the 49ers, man. Because they're the underdog in this game. I want them to win, right?
Yeah.
Not because I'm in love with either team. So I have this kind of underdog mindset. And the reality is that you get in, I just go.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, because they are winning, right? They are that 10% of my classmates who just killed it. And so I wanted to be like them.
Right.
And the way you be like them is we just outworked. You know, there's this new mindset. Oh, you know, succeed fast or fail fast. All these cliches that people throw around, right? And for every cliche that somebody throws at me, I'm like, yeah, there's no fast route to basically building this community.
Right.
Because you know what? The first 10 years, everybody's sitting on the sidelines going, you'll fail. Right. So for the entrepreneurs, that's the entrepreneur mindset, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to work, man. You know, you're going to get tripped up. You know, you're going to be So he doesn't go at it. And a few of them crest. Mm-hmm. And those few, let's just talk about those few, have sold their companies, and I'm saying few, less than 10, and which with a yield of $2 billion plus dollars in this community.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, which you don't read about.
No.
Okay? We've had, why the city basically, the first facility the city said, indulge me in, you know, the old Hollywood video store. Here's $104,000. Okay. Actually, I'm sorry, $112,000. Number six, the new facility, was $54 million, including the garage. It is optimized in every way you can imagine, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There is no excuse from a facility and a support standpoint. Remember, we're not the entrepreneur making shit happen. We're just the ones supporting you and making shit happen,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want anything from you. The last guy walked away with several hundred million. It's fine.
Okay.
And several of them have done that in the last couple of years. It's fine. So that's kind of the journey, right? You continue to invest, and you're going to need to reap. But if you think you're just going to reap without investing, the other communities, and I'm, you know, just for our conversation, the Georgias, the North Carolinas, and the Florida will win. Our surrounding states will win.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be, I want more success. I don't want the next 10 years to be we're growing at a 3% rate.
Right.
And if you make the right investments, the governor on one hand crows about the $1.6 billion surplus. What the state of South Carolina just did was spend $880,000 in innovation across the state of South Carolina.
That all?
That should be $88 million.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot.
On a $1.6 billion, right?
Yeah.
But my point is, it is incumbent on folks like myself mm-hmm. to work with the legislator to kind of show you what can be done. This
right.
stopped being a pilot project a long time ago. And so, you know, what I would say to the folks listening is this is just a great example of what couldn't and shouldn't happen, but happened.
Yeah.
Right. And
thankfully so, because look at these statistics you've got
yeah.
here. Over 700 companies,
yep. well,
entrepreneurs, tech companies came through.
230 graduates, the most recent one
tech
being
incubators. So,
yeah. Quick sort, you know, just graduated, you know, with an average wage in the mid six figures. $2 billion in investment.
Yeah.
We are now 5% of the regional economy. Tech yeah. is 5% of the regional economy.
That's
growth,
huge.
Right?
That's huge.
So my point is that the investment by mm-hmm. the community will yield back in the community. And for those entrepreneurs who come in, they're entitled to run away with their, you know, with their bags of riches.
That's what I was, because I love listening to the story of how you became who you're going to be and who you just exceed all your expectations, probably. You probably have a lot still coming.
Well, he's not done yet. And I got a dad up, apparently, right?
Yeah. Because
he did all this for his kid.
I think you're doing a
good
job.
Isn't that what I learned earlier there? You did all this
yeah,
for your kid?
But I mean, you know. yeah. Stephanie, sorry.
Yeah. I'm just curious, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's trying to break into, like, a young adult? Like, say you have a kid who's high school who has an interest in tech. Like, what route? You shift gears a lot and, you know, your journey has changed.
Yeah.
How would they get started?
I think the first thing I would tell any young person is don't try to be something you're not. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have, and I would love to share that with you guys and perhaps the audience at some point, we have a chart that's based on your personality type. You're loyal, you're rational, you're inquisitive,
handsome.
They fall exactly. Hands. So the reality is that the tech industry wants them all. So the idea being, my parents swore that I would be a software engineer, and it's not something I wanted to do. It might be different today, but working with when I was working with punch cards was not my idea of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I came full circle and I work with the tech industry. Isn't that crazy? So my point is that to be passionate about whatever they do, do it well, and then be curious, and then just go place themselves. Like I want to just come. I was joking, said I want to learn how to cook Thai food, and so I was joking with somebody saying, I'm going to see if they let me wash dishes at the Thai restaurant, so I can kind of look over my shoulder what's going on,
right?
And by talking to the guys, right? So put yourself in a situation, force yourself. You got to throw yourself in it, you know, Adam. nobody's going to say, "Hey, Bobby, Susie, you'll come on up." You know, let's no.
Wait, did you do dishes at a Thai restaurant?
No, but I.
But
it's on my list. It's on my list. You know, just how am I going to learn to cook Thai food?
Right, like, I love it.
Minus a recipe and watching YouTube.
Right, oh, right. Actually, that.
Why does that taste like that?
Uh huh.
So my point is back to, I think for any young person, they've got to figure out what they're passionate about. And I just got through telling you that a tech company has every aspect of what somebody's passionate about, and just be better at it and work hard and have this kind of, I'm just going to be the best I'm going to do. And I'm going to, so what when I started, I was somewhere in there, when I was weaving through, I said, I wanted to know that my boss, Joe Riley, was better off that morning, that day, that month for what I was doing. Right, and so if you go into with that mindset of, I'm going in wherever, whatever I do, they are going to be better for what I do, mm-hmm. and you have this mindset of being, I'm a donor, not a recipient.
Right,
right.
You will go a long way, right? And then yeah. what happens is pretty soon, it really becomes emancipating, because that young person's thinking to themselves, who needs who more? I'm really an important part of this organization. And I tell folks, if you go in an organization that is healthy, right? This is what Joe Riley said a long time back. I remember him saying this to a third party. What can I do? We have these good people who come in, they learn, and then they move on.
Right.
Right? It's a healthy situation. So anybody who works for me, I'm like, I want you to do the best you can, and I'm sure somebody's going to pick you off and go. And then I struggle, basically, but it only takes me about 3 days, 3 weeks to kind of get back, you know, from the loss mm-hmm. of that person because mm-hmm. I'm running lean.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I think one of you guys had asked early on, right? We started out as a one-man show, basically a one-man shop, and we existed as that for 10 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
10 Today, years. We are just a three-person shop. Oh. So
what?
We're three. The Charleston Digital Court is run basically by a marketing coordinator, who we just hired out of SCAD in December.
Good for you.
Yeah, introduce
so we were a two-person shop who just went to a three-person, an operations manager and myself.
Wow, right?
And an amazing brain trust
right.
of community-minded folks who want this community to be what we are making it and want it to be better.
They've bought in.
They completely have bought in. And they all have advice. And all we have to do is just go and execute some of the wonderful things we hear
mm-hmm.
that day, that week, that month.
Yeah.
And look, if you do it well enough, you end up, you know, being so we're very proud, you know, of meeting those objectives. More importantly, when I talked about being selfish, this isn't about what I was doing, right? This should be by design felt for generations beyond people in the workforce today. That's the idea, right? I'm a very accomplished surgeon. I'm a very accomplished son. What's my daughter son going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's about them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the mindset. It's this kind of go along. So I was thinking, what about my daughter, right?
Right.
She can go. They can work. Go work anywhere in the world they want to. But can they work in Charleston and have an amazing
full life?
Be able to afford that house that's up 200% from basically 10 years ago.
Right.
And that kind of thing. So. We wake up with that kind of mindset. We don't wear it in our sleeve, but we're very deliberate in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We're pragmatic in, you know, in the approach, and we're perfectly fine saying no. We don't try to be everything, you know, to everybody. And it's not going to be a no for no sake. It's a constructive no.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that's, and we're very sort of value oriented. So to me, I mean, you know, I just sharing that sort of mantra, you know, and just go for it, you
and
know. But be sort of deliberative and have this kind of, I'm in to win.
Yeah.
You know, don't get in if you want to just kind of go in and if you're gonna come at it in a mediocre mindset, things like ChatGPT will replace you. But if you come at it with, how do I use these tools, right? So my point is, you use technology to command it, and if you're not careful, it will command you.
Right?
Yes.
And that's a good way to look at it.
It is.
Really is. So what are you doing to intentionally bring technology to minorities and women?
Great question, Mike. So early on, you look at Microsoft, you look at all the big companies, the Google and everything else, and they're like, we're off. We need to bring more minorities.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you the one thing that is extremely important to me, and that is if you hear it come out of somebody's mouth, what they are referencing is they're referencing a condition, an economic condition that existed 10 years ago,
okay,
or 5 years ago.
Okay.
They're not referencing what exists today. And I'm going to give you a case in point.
Please do.
We had a class yesterday on ChatGPT.
Yep.
50% of it was female.
Okay.
Within that female audience, we had an African-American and we had a Hispanic. We're not just talking about, nobody seems to want to include the Hispanics in that count.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? One of our partners is the Hispanic Business Association, right? 50%. Everybody say, well, only be 20%. Okay, number one. Number two, when we started the year at the Tech Center, at the flagship, we started with one woman entrepreneur, right?
Okay.
We're 6 weeks into the year.
Already. Almost
through the day.
Good Lord.
And we have four women entrepreneurs in the building, two of which have benefited from our diversity initiative. A diversity initiative isn't just putting him, discounting some space and saying, come on over, it's putting him with mentors, helping him with whatever they need, right? So we distinguish ourselves from traditional incubation in that we're not going to give you a steady ration of things you should know. We're going to tell you, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you tell us what you need when you need it. So it's on demand, right?
Okay.
I'd like to meet somebody with capital. There's a gentleman who mentioned it in the class yesterday. He's a serial entrepreneur.
Okay.
And he's got this transcriptionist service, medical transcriptionist service. And I just happen to have a venture capital firm in town for the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
Nice.
And they're meeting at 2:00 because he just said, I'd like to, right?
Hey, we're looking for sponsors.
So I
want to
come back to the minorities. Okay, so having a diversity initiative, anybody who comes into the learning center who is underrepresented doesn't pay for the class.
Okay.
Right, so that's the other thing, right? You just use a code to kind of get in. And I say that if we keep it's already, the trajectory is already rising, but you just keep at it.
Yeah.
You keep at it. I've got two girls at home, so I'm more sensitive to women in the workplace than almost anybody. But I'm not going to wear it like a chip on my shoulder. I'm going to say what opportunities they have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them the one thing I would say about diversity and minorities. Anybody who comes to me who is in that category, so you have to work harder than any of them. I did.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
Otherwise, and you, it's just the reality, right? So don't think there's this tendency to think, oh, you should give me a handicap because,
right.
No, you're going to get the handicap, but you're still going to have to work harder. But what I'm giving you small point.
As a woman, that's a true statement.
It's
true statement.
So. How do I feel about it? Don't want something for them that they don't want for themselves. Sure. But the reality is for those who want, there is more opportunity. Again, I said there's more opportunity today. Just ask me what I'm doing, not what I think should happen, right? And that's the thing. I just can't get into meetings and I'm like, listen, I know the issues. I didn't come here unprepared. I just want to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Nice.
Right? We're incentivizing at a higher level than, and there are some glaring facts that we can get into about what we've learned from doing that.
Sure.
Well, that will help shape.
Send some of these people
facts
our way so we can have them on the podcast.
Yeah, that would shape some.
Oh, that'd
of these
be great.
I mean, to have two women entrepreneurs and say talk about we've got two right now. One is a little camera shy, the other one is great. She's like, my God, this is great. I just tell them I need
something.
Send
her away.
Exactly.
Now I want to close that with the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
We want
entrepreneurs and tech companies to come to you, right?
Yeah,
and so
wanna,
what we're doing too is we're selling Charleston
as
the American Marketing Association Charleston podcast. I looked you guys. You're here because I wanted you because all of the stuff that you've done for the city, but the CDC really looks like a future AMA. Like, why can't Charleston be a marketing hub?
Yeah.
Like you created. I mean, I'm not you. I can't take, you know what I mean? But we're going to build. We're going to keep at it, right? We're going to be persistent and work hard.
Yeah.
So what's your elevator pitch?
Well, I think okay, here's what I would say. First of all, unlike traditional economic development, where incentives or why you're here, right?
Yeah.
Cheaper labor, cheaper land. Oh, and by the way, we'll give you this. What we said is we're going to create an optimal environment for you to succeed, right? That is, if we can just clear your mind to focus on the one thing that will drive success, well, we have done that. Anybody who comes into the flagship, it is this mantra to anybody around me. We want you to focus on being successful, and we will take care of the rest. There is no baggage. I mean, the rest being anything. Tell me what you need, and you will get it.
Pretty resourceful, dude.
Okay, that's the point. Why? Why can we do that? Because we are singularly focused on tech entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can say that, but go around. Oh, she's port. Go around over there. They're manufacturing. Go around over there. They're distribution. No. None of those guys around us. I don't need to have those conversations. I need to focus on what is next in terms of tech.
Yes.
And I need to basically, I need to very quickly, as the concierge, as the conductor, get you to those no-nonsense resources where you can be successful. And everything else just goes away, right? And depending on how bad I want it, I mean, even financially, things can go away, you know, around
sure.
because we want you to focus on that, right? There could come a day, basically, where we have, you know, you're coming into the green line, red light, or, you know, red line, green line. The green line is everything is on us. Everything's on us. You know, we'll take a small piece of the company.
Okay.
The red line right I now see. Is, you know, you pay your small subsidized, you know, but it's more, it, you know, but the bottom line is that, you know, when you grow from 18 companies to 700, here's what I would say, Mike. It's the stew, right? Let the results speak for themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is why you want to be here. Not because I sold you better than the next community.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have the ingredients. And at the end of the day, that a thing that touches my soul, that doesn't touch your soul, it doesn't touch her soul. If Charleston is the place that touches your soul, then you need to be here.
Boom.
I love it.
So,
okay.
Thank you all.
Fine, then.
Thank you.
This was exciting.
Yes.
This was very fun.
Thank you, Ernest. How do they get a hold of you? What?
So, man. I think that, I mean, everything, you know, in terms of the Charleston Digital Corp, everything revolves around CharlestonDigital, you know, .com,
sure.
Charleston Digital Corp, and then in terms of the CDC Learning Center, which is our new initiative, which we launched in September, which is all kind of focused on tech ed. It's CDCLearningCenter.com.
CDCLearningCenter.com.
Very, very simple. You know, they just kind of track with our name.
And you just had a session on AI.
We have a series on AI, and we've got an amazing session on, it's a 4-hour session on sales, developing your sales playbook for an entrepreneur.
Oh.
And that is, it's from a guy, an entrepreneur, a Canadian entrepreneur who settled in on building on facility number one, original flagship, and cashed out. He sold his company to, and he says, Ernest, he says, I'm here and I'm ready to give back. What you did for me was amazing.
Yes.
So he's got this, an amazing class. And again, I mean, you know, for underrepresented folks, they come in at no charge, but they'll learn a lot about it. And this is how he prefaced it. I was joking with my co-founder, I thought we knew a lot about sales until a silent investor in a company mentioned about this. We need to go to this. Boy, did we not know.
Nice.
So it's a very comprehensive 4-hour session. And that's what's coming up next week.
I love that. And for someone who wants to sign up at CDCLearningCenter.com.
CDCLearningCenter.com. And by the way, full circle, we are now spending money to market the CDC Learning Center.
Look at that.
While we're building, we are not just building product. I'm not just the kitchen. I've got one leg in the kitchen and one leg basically at hosting.
Hey, we want to help.
Yeah, so listeners, AMA. Go ahead and follow them on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook, right? At CDC Learning Center.
Yep.
Love
it. So we're just getting started on that, and it's pretty soon you're going to have a robust curriculum. I mean, everybody, we get these surveys. We do a very aggressive survey, and everybody's like, we want more.
Awesome.
We'll be sure to push that out to our own LinkedIn network, the Charleston AMA, because all those classes are very vital.
And I would add, Stephanie, this is not, again, you know, so you become one of the army, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking for one of the elements of marketing is how you use these low to no cost tools when you're starting out. Mm-hmm. You know, in this lean startup model, right? We're looking for somebody to come in for, and they start to come in and talk about these are all ways, these are all online tools that are available. Hey, by the way, you might want to ask them to do a Google review.
Sure.
You know, so we're looking for somebody from the, you know, they talk about, you know, from the marketing association, a professional can come out and say,
I would be happy
we're
to
leading
do it.
This class, and these are things, you know, and you know, you need
sure.
to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That creates, I'm interested if you need someone.
That,
so let me
that
know.
Creates these AMA synergies, you know, yeah. with the yeah. with the organizations, and similarly, the partnership would be like, guys, I'm not getting anything, but you guys get, you know, 50% discount on any class they offer moving forward.
That'd
you know,
be great. This, maybe we can do like an AMA panel where we could eat like three or four exactly. of us to come in and share our knowledge and
yeah. whatever you need.
Yeah. Whatever you yeah. need, we're yeah. here.
You
to
got
help.
My number.
So
you
the beauty of this is the formation of a relationship rather than. You know, there's the AMA over there and the CDC over there.
That's exactly
over there.
It. That's
but exciting. But now that's what I look for, right? To have what I call meaningful partnerships.
Yes.
So. Well, thank you for this meaningful conversation.
It was wonderful.
Ernest. I enjoyed being
learned
here.
A lot.
We always love
lot.
To see you.
Even Brian learned a lot.
And please send some of your people from Digital Quarter our way.
So absolutely.
Your marketing yes. director. We he they, yeah. That person, he, she needs yeah. to join our club.
Absolutely. I'm yeah. going to go back and tell her that.
Yes.
Awesome.
And
that's
pay
great.
For it, too.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Exactly. Okay, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'd be happy to do it.
All right. Well, before we leave, Steph, do you want to close us out or do you want me to?
Oh, I'll be happy to close it out. Thank you guys for being with us here today. We, of course, have to thank our sponsors, the Charleston Radio Group. Brian, thanks for your help today, bud. You're the best.
Oh.
We want to say what's up to our boy, Jerry Feels Good.
Jerry Feels Good. What's up, buddy?
Who is our intro and the beats on the way out. So thank you for being with us today, Ernest. And Mike and Stephanie would like to say goodbye. So
see you next time, Charleston.
Bye, Charleston.
Thanks, Ernest.
Thank you.
Woohoo!